Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Modern Loving Family podcast, where we talk about all things polyamory, parenting, queerness, and love in the modern age. All right, everyone, welcome back to the Modern Loving Family podcast. We're so glad that you're here.
Yeah,
happy holidays.
Yes, we're getting in the holiday spirit here. Yes, I am one of those people that puts my Christmas decorations up in November, much to Carl's dismay.
Celebrate however you like.
First off, so we're going to be getting to, this episode is going to be all about the green-eyed monster, aka jealousy. But before that, a couple of things that we want to acknowledge. First of all, we have nearly 1,200 downloads on this podcast.
Good God.
Which is wild. Y'all are really nosy.
Or you're really nice.
Or you're really nice.
We love both.
Yeah, right? we love both. You know, whatever gets us the clicks, right? No, but for real.
I'm really happy you enunciated that.
Yeah, I always that.
We're starting off really well with this recording session. But for real, we are sincerely thankful for our listeners. This is much bigger than I think any of us thought it was going to be. So thanks for tuning in, and thanks for all of the messages we've received, the emails, etc.
Yeah, the support has been like extremely appreciative. Like,
yeah, like this was us going out on a major limb. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, the response has been really positive. So thank you for that. In addition to that, we have good baby news.
Heyo.
So trigger warning for talk of pregnancy, genetic testing, etc. If you don't want to hear this, just fast forward a couple of minutes. We did elect to do first trimester testing, at the urging of my doctor, and we got a good report back. We are negative for all the various conditions that tests for. So we have, yay. Mm-hmm. The three of us also know the baby's sex, but we are not going to be announcing that. If you knew Kendi and I during our previous pregnancy, the one that resulted in our daughter, we did not announce gender. We did no gender reveal or anything like that with that pregnancy, and we're not going to be doing it with this one either, because frankly, it just weirds me out. No offense to you if you've done that.
I definitely saw a gender reveal that was two professional wrestlers throwing each other through a table.
That came up in my feed too.
You're
which
welcome.
I blame you fully for that. And if we were going to do a gender reveal, that would be the one that Kendi would opt for.
You called me out. It's fine.
Yes, I did call you out 100%. So
yeah, here for it.
Carl, this is your first go around with a pregnancy, this up close and personal. How are you feeling?
I'm excited. I'm excited for y'all, especially. But this has been a really eye-opening and learning experience.
Yeah, it's been a trial by fire.
No fire.
Okay. So we're
no
not
fire around the baby.
We're not calling my
no pyro
my
baby
swings fire. Okay. Good. Great. But yeah, so we've had a good baby report. And all is going well. I've had a few blood sugar issues and things like that, but we're getting it under control. So with much help to the two gentle thems that are sitting here at the table. So thank you both for that.
I mean, we're not building spinal cords or anything like that.
I'm trying to do the most over here. So
you got fingernails.
Yeah, I got fingernails to make.
Drink your juice, Shelby.
We have somewhat morbidly begun referring to, so for those who don't know me personally, I am a diabetic. I was not a diabetic until the pregnancy with our daughter. That pushed me into gestational diabetes, which then pushed me into type 2 diabetes. Yes, that is a thing that can happen. I went into that pregnancy with a completely normal A1C. It's a real bummer. But we have sort of personified my glucose levels and have started calling my blood sugar Shelby. That's a Steel Magnolias reference. If anybody knows that, there are a few of you that are probably going, oh God, no.
I mean, I still ain't watched the movie. You won't allow me to watch until after the baby's born.
Nope. Nope. No. We will not allow you to watch that until the baby's born.
If there's any black people out there that have seen Steel Magnolias, tell me. I don't know any of you. Because I'm a black person who's never seen that. It wasn't a staple in my household.
No, I can see where it would not be a staple. I feel like that's very much white Southern culture.
No, the Venn diagram of people of color and people who have watched Steel Magnolias are two completely distinct circles.
Yeah, it's not a Venn diagram.
Well, I had Lifetime movies like Mommy May I Sleep with Danger. Like,
I swear you mentioned that movie once a week.
It was a seminal classic in my household. That was before Lifetime became Hallmark. We're devolving the conversation.
We are.
But
we
if you really shout are. Out to my Lifetime stands out there, you know who you are.
Oh my God.
Someday when Angela Bassett remakes Steel Magnolias, I will be there with you for it, though.
Dude.
Oh, good Lord. That'll be a Metamore date.
You're right about that.
All right. So let's get into it. So this episode, we are talking about jealousy. This is probably the most brought up topic in our DMs and in our comments with people who are curious about polyamory or have maybe even started to wade into the waters of open relationships in general. And that's understandable. This is a pretty big hurdle that a lot of people have to kind of confront whenever they do decide to open up a relationship. So we'll go ahead and get into it. So full disclosure, Kendi and Carl just got the questions that I am about to ask them. I did that fairly on purpose because I really do want this to be a very candid conversation. And I kind of want them to respond, without having rehearsed these answers a whole lot. So thank you both for agreeing to be put on the spot in this safe space.
As opposed to the deep dive planning that we usually do for these.
Just the hours of research.
Weeks of planning, yeah.
Well, usually I do a lot of planning and then, you know, y'all kind of show up.
Well, so. You know, we actually do uh-huh. some research. But trying not to pawn off all the work on you
uh-huh.
by, you know, just saying, you know, We don't want to make it look like we're not doing anything.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
But we're like 7-Eleven. We're not always doing business, but we're always open.
Oh, Lord. For those who don't...
Our lives are research.
Our lives are... Wow. Look at this.
Oh, good Lord. Moving along. So, first off, do the two of you get asked as much about jealousy as I do? Because the first thing... Whenever, like, I tell people that, like, I'm in an open relationship or anything like that, or that I have two partners, people are like, oh, but what about jealousy?
I mean, quantitatively, how much do you get asked? Like, let's say per week.
Literally every single time that I come out to a person about having two partners, they inevitably ask if you two get jealous of each other. Like, that is usually the second question.
No. Sorry, I'm jumping in if you want to answer first, Carl.
Go ahead.
No, I don't get asked if I'm jealous. I get asked how cool is that because I have male privilege. And I mean, it's pretty disgusting a lot of times. But people think it's like, you know, you're living the dream, man. It's all cool. I'm like, that's not really how I see it. And it feels very... it feels very kind of Kang the Conqueror kind of thing. It's,
yeah, you're living the dream thing always, yeah. like, icks me out.
Yeah, like, yeah, it makes my skin crawl. And so I, like, have to explain. It's like, no, it's really not like that. It's like, this is an equal partnership. And we are polyamorous. Boom. I'm bisexual, non-binary. My partner's queer, non-binary. And then we have outside relationships. When we seek them out, or when they seek us out... Just putting this out, I'm not dating anybody at all right now. And
I'm not trying to date anybody else. Holy crap.
Yeah.
No, I got enough on the plate.
Right. But, and that's kind of, I guess it's kind of the spectrum of when people find out that we're poly, they're like, oh, so does that mean I have a chance? Or it's.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That is totally a thing that happens.
It is. It is. But it's like those people that kind of do that sometimes aren't even poly.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of like this monogamy cultural conditioning, right?
Right.
And even when I was a serial monogamist, you know, as soon as I was breaking up with one person, I had someone else in my sights
mm-hmm.
because I was afraid of being alone. And I was conditioned to say I had to be with somebody to be complete. I got off the train a little bit, but
it's okay.
When people generally don't ask me if I get jealous, people generally treat me like it's a feather in my cap, and that grosses me out.
That's so wild to me that we have such a different experience. Because I mean, we have both been polyamorous for about the same length of time,
mm-hmm.
and have had a pretty similar experience. Just because I mean, we have been each other's partner through most of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's wild to me that we have had such wildly different experiences. So, yeah. And I do think that you're right, that kind of male perceived privilege definitely plays into it.
Oh, yeah.
What about you?
I mean, having more recently come out as polyamorous, I don't think I've been asked about it once. Again,
male body,
being in a male body definitely comes with a different set of assumptions from people in the general public. But I will say occasionally finding out that y'all are probably works out occasionally. Just saying.
It did work out in our favor, didn't it?
Touché.
Well, no, I was y'all's friend and was both of y'all's friends for years before I even knew.
Right.
That's true.
And even once I found out, it jived with my own personal sort of morality that was evolving. And it was good to have labels and good to talk about it and put and just compare stories, right? Yeah. And just have somebody to talk to about it. Even when I had no designs on dating you, I in fact was afraid to ask, right? Because I didn't want to ruin the friendship that we had and very much was hesitant to even ask if you were interested.
Right. I think, though, that there are, like, that certain set of people who aren't polyamorous who, like, when they do find out that we are polyamorous, it's, like, a weird, like, oh, I have a chance thing. Like, I totally get, Kendi, like, what you're referring to, because I've definitely had that happen.
Yeah.
And, like, the people that I've had that happen with are people who don't want a relationship. I think that they're just looking for a hookup. Mm-hmm. And, like, they hear polyamorous and they hear, oh, well, there's a chance that we might hook up. And if you know me, you know that I am like one of the most demisexual people that has ever demisexualed. And yes, I just made that word up.
I'm sure you're not the first.
And so like hookup culture has never, ever really been a part of my life. I have to be pretty good friends with somebody before I'll even consider dating them generally. And even then, like it, physical things are not immediately on the table. So yeah, I think that it's really wild that we have all three had such very different experiences. Like I was at the nail salon the other week and I mentioned something like I don't, you know, make a habit of like coming out to like literally everyone, including my nail tech. But I mentioned something about, you know, oh, well, you know, one of my partners is out doing some errands for me. And then my other partner is at home with the kid. And she was immediately like, but don't they get jealous? And I mean, I don't know. Y'all might get jealous from time to time, but it really hasn't come up a whole lot.
But that gender assumption is really interesting.
Yeah. Well, and I will say that I think that most of the people who do ask me that question tend to be women or women aligned people. Mm-hmm. So maybe there is like a really heavily like gendered thing to this. And I think that that's really interesting. One of the responses that I always get whenever I do like tell people that I'm non-monogamous is, oh, well, I could never do what you do because I would be so jealous. And well, if that's the case, you're monogamous. Nobody's asking you to do this.
And that's fine.
Yeah. And that's fine. Like we don't ever like try to act like we have some superiority because we're non-monogamous or something like that.
Oh, you don't? I'm
sorry. And like one thing that I always tell people is like, you know, if the relationship or the relationships are secure, you're really not as likely to feel jealousy. Like if you're secure in yourself and if the relationship is secure, it's generally not something that's going to come up all the time. Like not saying it's not ever going to come up, but it's not going to come up all the time. So,
well, we're male-bodied people, and so of course we don't get jealous. Obviously, that's what I learned from all this.
Because you're secure in your manhood, right?
No, we just get angry and break shit.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, that's how I work out my feelings.
Oh, okay.
And all the therapy that I'm paying for, I just fucking take a sledgehammer to a wall, and I don't think I've ever even swung a sledgehammer.
No,
except in that song.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh my lord. So the question for the two of you.
Yep.
Tell us about a time where you personally had to deal with jealousy. So you were experiencing jealousy within a relationship.
Do you want to rock, paper, scissors this?
You went first last time. I'll go first this time.
Okay.
Regardless of the assumptions, yes, we do get jealous. It happens. We are human beings, and we have feelings, and sometimes stuff happens. Crazy. Sure, yeah, I get jealous. The way that I... jealous, like, everything... we're like off, just the realization that jealousy is a feeling,
yeah,
is incredibly important. And the sort of mental gymnastics that I do around that are, it's okay to have feelings, and my feelings are valid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a feeling. I can't control those feelings.
Right. Your feelings don't have to be rational.
That's what makes them a feeling.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's important for me then to take a step back, and I do this generally about all feelings. I'm not necessarily intellectual as much as I sort of intellectualize those kinds of things and try to step back and understand what those feelings are in a self awareness kind of way. And so when I step back and I realize that I have that feeling, and usually that jealous feeling then is acted out in some way,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's when I realize, oh, why am I behaving in this way? And then I start thinking about it and going, oh, well, then I was jealous about something.
So tell us about the last time that you had to have this conversation with yourself.
A few weeks ago, right, when we were having our anniversary trip, y'all had a gig that came up in the middle of that weekend, and that was, you know, kind of disappointing.
Yeah.
Especially when that involved an extra, you know, 5 hours of driving.
Yeah.
and the weekend, and, you know, in the middle of the weekend. And so we were going to go up and we were going to spend the evening, and then we were going to have to drive all the way back to Little Rock and then go back up and finish the weekend out. And I totally felt that this sucks. Why, you know, this is a really complicated relationship, and fuck, you know, we tried really hard to find that weekend, and then we found the weekend, and then stuff happened.
And then, of course,
and stepping back and looking at that and going, oh, okay, I was a little upset, and then step back and went, why am I feeling upset? Because I'm jealous of the rest of your life. Oh, I'm not the only part of your life, right? And then stepping back and looking at myself within the person having those feelings,
mm-hmm.
I then take a further step back and go, I'm not the only person that's involved in this relationship. Not only is there another partner in all relationships like that, but there is a second other partner whose feelings are part of this as well. And so in decentering myself in that, it's easier for me to put those feelings that I'm having into a larger perspective.
Yeah.
Right. And so when I'm able to do that, I can say, yes, my feelings are disappointment, but I get to counter that with feelings of happiness that you had an opportunity to, you know, to earn some money over that weekend. Happiness for the time that I got to spend with you in the driving, and the conversations and stuff that we had in the driving were also really nice. So, I mean, there were other benefits that happened as a result of that initial disappointment, but it didn't stop there and it didn't end there.
Mm-hmm.
And so in intellectualizing that feeling and then decentering myself in that behavior, I still felt jealous, right? The feeling doesn't go away, but I put that feeling into a context with all of the other feelings and all of the other things that are going on around it. And I go, okay, that feeling is what it is. It's not the only feeling
right.
I have. And it's not the only part of the larger circle that is, you know, the lives and the really crazy busy lives that we all lead, which is why none of us are dating anybody.
No, God, no. For the love of God, no. Kendi, tell us about a time where you had to deal with jealousy.
Oh, shit.
I mean, you can tell us about more than one time.
Oh, I know that. You know, this is not limited. I got jealous. There was it was one of your past relationships, Jay, and I won't speak their name because it makes me gag from bile.
Big same. Yeah. Big same. I already know who you're talking about.
I know. And I was so jealous because I couldn't wrap my mind around what you saw in them.
I mean, look, in hindsight, I can't wrap my mind around what I saw in them either.
No. Well, and so I saw, you know, how it started. I saw you talking to them one time outside of a gig, and I was like, I don't like him at all. And I said, but he's talking to Jamie, so I guess that they buried the hatchet. And so I was just kind of like moving along. And then obviously you all started dating, and I was wrapping my mind around like, what does she see in him? What does she see in him? And I was so busy being jealous within myself and not verbalizing it to you that it just became a block. Mm-hmm. And so that was the hard, I mean, I can go further and further, and that led to me making some dumb decisions that we've probably talked about in podcasts before, but that.
I don't know if we've delved into that completely, but we don't have to delve into it today. Right.
That's fine. We'll open up that Pandora's box another time. And it might be a follow-up question. I don't know. But for me, it was, I couldn't understand, and I was afraid to talk about it.
Yeah.
And that fear of not wanting to make you unhappy was holding back my communication. And so, like, for the until you two, like, started getting on the outs and, you know, we're starting to look like it was going to break up, that's when I was like, oh, now I can finally say things. Like, no, if you had said something beforehand,
right,
Kendi, then people might have avoided this kind of torture. So for me, that was... And coming out of that and like learning more about myself, I know now that if I'm starting to feel jealous, it's basically I need to ask myself, is there something that I'm missing, or is what's missing from me right now? And I sit in that discomfort for a little bit. And I think that's the most important part, is being able to sit in that uncomfortable feeling.
Yeah.
But not letting it overtake me, but still, you know, feeling my emotions without letting them rule my thoughts. Because as you both said, like, your emotions are emotions. Like, you can't control those.
Right.
You're going to feel a certain way. But
you even have to validate those, right?
Right, I mean, right, right.
They're there for a reason.
Yeah.
You have them.
Yeah. And then if I find out, you know, what's missing or what hasn't clicked yet, and then I have my aha moment. It's like, oh. Well, I just need to say this, or I need to do this, and that then by my experiments and hypothesis will lead me to feeling better about myself. Mm-hmm. And through therapy and then through time, like, that's what I've learned. But in that instance, that was 2015, 2016, something like that. The jealousy just clouded my communication.
Yeah.
And it made it impossible for me to actually say what I meant and mean what I say.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, one thing, so I'm referencing Tristan Taramino's book, Opening Up. So there is an entire chapter in here over jealousy, because I mean, this is something that comes up frequently in open relationships. And I mean, Kendi, I think by your own admission, you would say that during that time period, you maybe felt a little bit more insecure.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, you hadn't realized, you were still in denial that you were queer.
Mm-hmm.
You were still in denial about being genderqueer.
Mm-hmm.
And you were still in denial about a host of other things that we don't have to get into right now.
That's behind the paywall.
Yeah, that's the Patreon.
Because we need you to pay for my therapy.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And so one of the kind of things that drives jealousy sometimes is insecurity. And, like, I would say that, you know, when I was first coming into open relationships, I struggled with jealousy a lot more than I do now, because I was personally, like, really insecure with the way I looked and my body and things like that. And so whenever my partners would start, you know, trying to date someone else, my first thought was, well, they're comparing me to them. And so that was a big driving force behind my jealousy then. These days, it's more likely for me to feel feelings of jealousy if there is an unmet need. And usually, I mean, kind of like what Carl was saying, I can kind of take a step back when those feelings come up and, you know, and like you were saying, Kendi, acknowledge it and kind of sit in the ick for a minute and kind of figure out, you know, why am I feeling this way? And for me, very often, I can move pretty quickly from the ick to the, oh, this is just an unmet need. So for me, I was kind of racking my brain to like figure out the last time that I had like truly felt like a pang of jealousy. Because I mean, as we have acknowledged, the three of us are not dating anyone that is not at this table right now. Currently, other than I have a couple of common partners that I have referenced in the past. And so like the last time that I think that I had something that could even vaguely be referred to as jealousy would have been in February when, Carl, you were still dating the partner that you had been dating whenever you and I got together. Mm-hmm. So February 16th is my late mother's birthday. I have a very complicated relationship with the memory of my mother. There were a lot of things that she did really right with me. And then there are a lot of things that, you know, I pay a therapist to talk about on a regular basis and work through. But that was, so in February, I was still working. There was the polyamory at work episode. I was still working for that nonprofit that I was working for. It was a really stressful day. And like I said, it was my late mother's birthday. And I remember, like, Kendi and I were working together that day. And I had said to you earlier in the week, I was like, hey, this is what this day is. I'm just giving you a heads up. I would appreciate it if we could take a walk or something, or just, you know, do something just to kind of get my mind off of things. And I was at work because we had an event that day, and you texted me and were like, hey, this is the only day of the week that I can see, insert your ex's name here. So I need to go see her. This is paraphrasing that text. You did phrase it a bit more delicately than that, but it was a text. And yeah, I definitely had that pang of jealousy, but pretty quickly moved to, well, this doesn't actually have anything to do with her. Like, this has everything to do with time management, which is another thing that Tristan Taramino references in that chapter from Opening Up. Because so often, jealousy does come down to an unmet need. And as we have referenced in this podcast before, time management is a huge, huge hurdle in polyamory. And it's one that, I mean, the three of us still struggle with.
Even with the Google Calendar.
Even with the Google Calendar. But the thing is that you have to actually put things in the Google Calendar, my love.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's how it works. It doesn't read your mind. And neither do I. Thank God. and so, so yeah, you know, it's kind of like Kendi said, you know, it's taking that moment, sitting in the ick, and then moving into, oh, well, this is actually, you know, this kind of problem. And that makes it to where you can actually articulate the need rather than just, you know, snapping and being like, I'm jealous. How dare you? Blah, blah, blah. Because that's not actually all that productive. So any other times that you two would like to share about times where you personally felt jealous?
Yeah, there was another time early on in a relationship when I was still, it was like, this is like 2011.
Oh,
2010.
Oh, this is vintage.
This is aged like a fine bottle of vinegar. It's tart. Oh God, what was it? It was somebody that, again, wasn't poly, that was a friend of ours that I think you had like a couple of hookups with. And
back when I still, you know, wasn't at terms with my demisexuality and still did that.
Correct. And, but it, this was a thing of me having an unmet need and comparing myself to them.
Yeah.
And not being able to work out, like, and don't get me wrong, I like this guy. And I still like him a lot. He's weird as shit, but I like him.
Now that I'm putting two and two together and realizing who you're talking about, yeah, he is really weird.
Yeah.
Really weird.
Yeah. But he's very likable.
Yeah.
He's very sweet.
Yeah.
But at that point, I was just like, what does he have that I don't?
Yeah.
Because I was still coming to terms with my own polyamory. And that was also a point where, like, I was trying to put myself out there to date, and I was getting, like, slammed.
And not in the good way.
Yeah. Correct. Thank you for that reference.
You're welcome. Mm. Yeah, I mean, and that is one thing that I think, like, is an issue for a lot of people with jealousy and polyamory. And maybe this kind of plays into the fact that, like, I get asked about this a lot and you all don't, is that typically women and women aligned people in polyamorous relationships do have more dating opportunities. So like you all have to sometimes sit on the sidelines without as many opportunities, observing your partner who does get those opportunities. And that can definitely lead to some FOMO, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
So
I definitely would agree with that.
All right. Well, we've talked about a time where you had to personally deal with jealousy.
Mm.
Now let's talk about a time where you had a partner who was expressing jealousy. So tell us maybe a little bit about the situation and just how you navigated that with them.
I guess I'll go first because you went first last time. My first fiance was extremely jealous.
Yeah. And to be clear, like y'all were not in.
Oh yeah. Sorry. I should preface this. So this was back when I was still monogamous. Me and this girl gotten engaged. Like I think I was a freshman or sophomore in college. Can't remember. Don't get engaged before you're 37, guys. No, stop it. Stop it.
We got married at 23.
We weren't that young, were we?
I'm pretty sure, dude. At least I was.
Oh yeah, we were.
Remember, I'm always younger than you.
You are. Don't get engaged until you're 36. See, I amended it. There we go. Anyway, she and I were engaged, completely monogamous. And she had a lot of trauma built up because her ex-boyfriend was a credible cheater. Like, he was like the Olympian of cheating. And it was kind of like how Stella got her groove back. Like, she came out and at one point, like, threw his clothes on the lawn and, like, I think she's about to set the thing on fire. I think she set him on fire.
Oh.
Like.
I don't think I've heard this part of the story.
Maybe she just poured bleach on him. I don't remember. I think it was just bleach. Regardless.
Just bleach.
Okay. Shit was wild, yo. So whenever we got together, there was already this baggage of like, you know, comparing herself to other people.
Yeah.
Because she had been conditioned to do that because her ex-boyfriend was just a piece of crap.
Yeah.
And so we were together. I remember, like in high school, because we were dating in high school, my senior year. And if I would go out to hang out with some friends, she'd be like, "Well, where are you going? Who are you with?" Da da da. And I would just be like, "Well, I'm just going out with my friends." Like, "Well, who are your friends?" And I would be like, "The people that I'm friends with. I don't understand what the problem is." But as the relationship progressed, and then you know, I thought that my goal in life was to get married and have children and be monogamous, and we were engaged to get married. She would get jealous when I would go to school, like as a college freshman. She's like, "Well, why do you have to be gone so much?" I'm like, "Well, I'm literally in class. I said, "What are you doing after class?" "Well, I have this function because I'm a musician and these are the things that I have to do." And so there was already a conflict there just from my like professional life. But then when it came to like romantically, it was always, you know, "Well, who is this girl? Who is this girl you're talking to?" And not because I was talking to them in an effort to, you know, be in a relationship, but just because I have friends. And that's how I am. That's who I am.
I mean, you and I became friends during this time.
Exactly. Yeah. And so dealing with that, I did not have good coping mechanisms. So I would just kind of go inward on myself, and I would let her dictate, you know, where I was going, you know, what I was going to do. And it wasn't until she and I had a conversation one day at her place, and she was like, "Hey, I think, you know, that we should part ways because I want you to have all the opportunities that you want to have. And, you know, I don't want to hold you back. And in that moment, I was like, oh, great, I'm free. And I hate, you know, I've admitted to that before. And I felt bad for thinking that. But, you know, I didn't have the tools to be able to say, this isn't working. And here's why. All I had was, well, if I'm not with somebody with the intention of marrying them, then what else am I going to do?
Yeah.
And so dealing with her jealousy was me just letting her run roughshod or whatever. And I'm not trying to paint her as a terrible human being. Like,
no, she's just, I mean, very much a victim of toxic monogamy.
Exactly. Yeah. and the examples that were laid down by her, maternal figures, I mean, it's very much in the same line.
Yeah.
And I don't know what happened in their past. So they could be victims as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was how I dealt with that, in that point in my life. In a different point in my life, when we were already polyamorous, there was a person that you and I were dating simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And I could tell that she was jealous of you.
Yeah.
She was horribly jealous of you. And the ways in which she went about it was to try to kind of like subterfuge, like try to put a wedge between the two of us.
Yeah.
And the way that we handled that, like you and I handled that, was to talk, be like, hey, this doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
These actions aren't in line with how we are.
Right. And like, we didn't even have the tools in our toolbox at that point that like we have now. But like, we still came to each other and we're like, this doesn't feel good.
Exactly. Yeah. And for that matter, I'm so thankful, because like, we at least had that strength of character.
Well, we were secure in our relationship.
Exactly.
And I mean, that's, again, going back to insecurity, like, you have to be secure in yourself and you have to be secure in the relationship. I mean, you don't have to do those things before opening up, but it sure does make things a lot easier.
Yeah. So with that situation, it led to a positive outcome, because, you know, we broke up with that person, or she made a phone call and broke up with us. And
I don't really know who broke up with who.
It was weird. It was weird. It was weird. I've had some weird breakups in my life, but that was a
top contender.
It's like number three.
Honestly, my queer breakups have been the weirdest breakups.
Well, so we are dramatic.
Yeah.
But that's me. I won't hog any more time.
Carl.
I mean, I've had several ex-partners that were jealous for various and sundry reasons. The biggest reason that seemed to be common among most of those was just jealous of other women that I was friends with.
Yeah.
And I am a generally pretty open and friendly person in groups where I'm comfortable. I'm not terribly great at integrating into new groups or anything like that. But among, you know, peers that I know and that I've developed relationships, I'm generally a pretty gregarious, open, friendly, I'm a connector within those kinds of circumstances. And so my friend groups have always been rather large, right? And I was one of those people in high school who like jumped between the different, you know, the different cliques.
I could
fit in with the jocks, and I could fit in with the guys in the career center, and I could fit in with, you know, and I had stuff that I could relate with and talk with, and I was friendly with everybody. And sometimes, you know, that got misinterpreted. Mm-hmm. And so, well, why were you talking with them? Why were you talking with her? And this and that. And again, in hindsight, now I see the sort of insecurity that I'm assuming was the cause of that jealousy, and also did not have the toolkit to advocate for myself. And so generally when those types of feelings were expressed to me, I reacted by closing up, right?
Yeah.
And being less friendly with people and closing friend groups in ways that were totally not good for me. Mm-hmm. Right. And sacrificed my own happiness and just shied away from situations like that to my detriment, right? And that sort of repressed attitude surfaces in other ways, down the road as well. And you know, I overreacted, to that, and really hated doing that, right? And in hindsight now, I totally wanted to please my partner, and people pleasing is probably one of my worst traits.
Oh, me too.
that I have spent quite a bit of money on therapy about, and rather than advocating for myself and my own needs, right, I sublimated those to the express need of my partner, justified or not. And changed my routine and my behavior.
And this is like another example of being a victim of toxic monogamy. Monogamy itself is not bad. Monogamy itself is not bad. And like, that's something that I feel like should be stated on this podcast. What we tend to frown on is this idea of toxic monogamy and some of this behavior that we're referencing here of like being afraid to let your partner even have friendships would definitely fall under the umbrella of toxic monogamy.
I mean, because you're putting the pressure on yourself to be their end all be all.
Right.
Because that is like the societal narrative, and it hasn't worked for anyone yet.
No. Is there another time that you had to deal with jealousy from a partner?
No, I mean, that's, I mean, that was a recurring problem. For me. And I have hopefully learned to better advocate for myself and better communicate my own needs and listen to my partners so that this doesn't come up as often. I hope.
Well, I mean, it came up definitely when we first got together, but I think that, I mean, obviously you're not dating anyone now, but I think that you would probably handle that differently moving forward.
Definitely would.
I mean, for me, I mean, I kind of thought about the situation with you and he, who we will not name in this podcast. And the thing, I think the thing that killed me about that situation is that I was several months into that relationship before I knew there was even a problem on your end. And like, if I don't know about something, there's not really anything I can do about it. And you were really good at bottling that up because I really didn't know. And like, there really weren't even any signs until all of a sudden there were so many signs. And you were actually coming to me with stuff. But by that point, you know, you had already kind of said, you said this already, that the relationship was starting to devolve. And, you know, had a pretty good inkling that we were not going to be lasting too far into the new year because we broke up like the beginning of January. That's an example of some cuffing season stuff right there. But yeah, I mean, once I knew there was an issue, you know, I think that I was, you know, like, hey, well, let's talk about this and, you know, try and kind of suss out what's really going on here. And I mean, that was when you were basically saying like, he does not treat you well. And I appreciated your candid, you know, your very honest take on that. So, I mean, I guess my biggest thing is when jealousy comes up, I just want to listen. And I want to listen and, you know, maybe this is not the best part of my personality, but I do tend to be a fixer. And I want to listen to things and I want to try and find a solution. The thing is with jealousy is there's not always a clear solution. Sometimes things are completely irrational and it is what it is. When we first got together, you and I, Carl, I was partnered with somebody else and she was very jealous right off the bat. And I mean, she was great about just being like, I am jealous. It's completely irrational. And I'm just acknowledging that it's completely irrational. And unfortunately with that situation, there wasn't really a whole lot I could do to address the jealousy other than just kind of like keeping the lines of communication open. Because the things that she was jealous over, so she and I were in a long distance relationship. Carl lives 6 minutes from my house. And so, you know, we work together. And so naturally we were going to see each other more often than she and I were. And so like the fact that we had that, plus she and I had completely opposite work schedules, those were things that really couldn't easily be changed or navigated. And so like, I think it's also important to acknowledge that sometimes jealousy comes up and you can't navigate it, and that's okay. Like sometimes it comes up for a very good reason, and sometimes it's not something that you can come back from. And I think that acknowledging that is an important thing too. So, what are your personal coping mechanisms? So when you start to feel jealous, and you've already kind of gotten into this a little bit, but do you have like a checklist for like when you start feeling these feelings of jealousy, or is there something that you do in particular to start kind of sussing out why you're feeling this way?
No, I mean, the biggest thing is the realization that it's happening, right? Yeah. That's it. Because when you're in the middle of the feeling, you don't often know what feeling exactly it is that you're dealing with.
Yeah.
And then it's in the stepping back and thinking about why I felt that way. Oh, that feeling was jealousy, or that feeling was disappointment, or that feeling was, you know, and identifying and putting a label on that feeling, that makes it easier to put it in the bucket where those feelings go so that you can deal with them. Mm-hmm. Jealousy here, I'm also in that view that jealousy tends to be an unmet need somewhere else. And that those unmet needs, I'm not really responsible for. Mm-hmm. I am, especially when dealing with other people's jealousy, I can't help the other person's feelings. I am not responsible for the other person's feelings. I'm responsible for my reaction. I'm responsible for my actions that may or may not have led to those feelings mm-hmm. in somebody else. And also, and dealing with it is much more common in my life with somebody else. And I tend not to be a terribly jealous person in general, just because I'm pretty good at decentering myself and looking at things in a larger global sort of perspective. But that acknowledgement that somebody else's feelings are not necessarily my responsibility, outside of just listening and then seeing what I can do about those.
You're not responsible for their feelings. You're responsible for your behavior, like mm-hmm. at the end of the day. So what about you?
I tend to ascribe to the Bluey model of emotional sit, have a cry, pick myself up. Biscuit. Oh, biscuits.
Y'all, when I say that this show has taken over our lives, it has taken over our lives.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very similar to what you were saying, Carl. And if it's jealousy of a person, I take a minute to figure out if it's, you know, if it's an irrational jealousy, or if it's a rational, like, concern.
Yeah.
And then if it's...
Yeah, and that's important.
Yeah. And if it's just an irrational jealousy, then I just take time to get to know the person, because I know it's just my little, like, dinosaur brain going back to some fight or flight crap. And I'm like, yeah, I should probably just talk to this human being because they're a human being. And if it's just a feeling of, like, jealous of maybe feeling left out, or FOMO, as you said earlier, you know, I just sit back and try to figure out, you know, what can I do to overcome that? Or not even what can I do to overcome it, but I've been in this feeling before, and it too shall pass.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that I've stewed over anything for longer than maybe, like, you know, 3 or 4 hours at tops in the past, you know, 5 or 6 years of being, if I've gotten jealous over anything. It's just really been, what need is not being met? When can I talk about this with my partner? And let's get in, how great is this resolution going to be? Because there's just no point in holding it in anymore.
Yeah.
Because I've been down that road now several times. and know what kind of damage it can do. And I know what kind of damage it has done.
Yeah.
And so I'm just eager to not repeat that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, kind of like you, like, again, I really hate sitting in the suck. I really hate it. I'm trying to get more comfortable with it, but it is not my favorite thing to just sit there and acknowledge, man, this really sucks and I feel really crappy right now. But I have tried to get better in the past couple of years about letting myself sit in that and just acknowledge that these are the feelings that I'm having before I get to the point of, you know, okay, why am I feeling this? Because I think it's important to sit in the suck for a little bit and just fully acknowledge that you're having that kind of reaction. So from there I kind of move into, well, why am I feeling this way? If it's FOMO, I kind of have to like have a conversation with myself. Okay, well, if I feel like I'm missing out on something, what have I done to put myself out there lately? and generally it's, I haven't done jack because,
Redownload Tinder.
Yeah.
Delete Tinder.
Yeah. Delete Tinder. The vicious cycle of downloading and deleting Tinder. I have already downloaded and deleted Tinder, I think like twice this year. Or three times, maybe. I can't really remember. But yeah, it's one of those things that like I end up downloading it when I need like a boost. And then I end up inevitably getting the most awful messages from male and male aligned people. And I'm just like, no, I can't do this. So
objectively, yeah, objectively, men are terrible.
Yeah. So yeah, I kind of like get into that. So if it's FOMO, then that's something that's pretty much on me, right?
Sure.
If it's an unmet need, or if it's something problematic like that my partner is doing, then it's time to have a conversation. And when I have that conversation, I really try to articulate things as non-confrontational-y as possible. So, you know, I felt blah, blah, blah when you did blah, blah. I try to use more I first language as much as I can. I'm not saying I always succeed in the heat of the moment, but I do try, and I feel like trying counts. So yeah, just having an open and frank conversation. I don't do well with bottling things up. I don't like to sleep on things if I can help it. I like to take some time to get my thoughts together, but then I just kind of want to hash things out and get things off my chest. And fortunately, I'm with two people that understand that and know that about me and put up with my shit. So thank you for that.
I would rather know than not know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, well, and that's one of the things that, right, you also do, because that sort of jealousy can rebound on itself and it feeds back, and then it gets worse, and mm-hmm. it spirals until it's at a point where you can't necessarily manage it, right? And so starting to play the you know, what's the worst that can happen game, right? Well, yeah. What is, you know, why do I feel insecure? Well, what could happen because of that? Well, what's the worst thing that could happen because of that? And then go, oh, it's probably not that bad. Mm-hmm. Right. So you assume the worst case scenario and then sort of bring it back in to try to manage, you know, into manageable levels.
Yeah.
I definitely don't play that game. I let the problem expand.
And that's why we're in therapy. Yes. So, okay. So for the two of you, what moves you from jealousy to kind of that space of neutrality to hopefully compersion? So we've talked about compersion on the podcast before, and compersion is just those kind of happy feel good feelings that you get when you are seeing your partner happy and, you know, in like, in love, whatever, with their other partner.
You get joy from their joy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like I was saying in the last question, just getting to know, if it's getting to know the person.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we had a head start because Carl and I have known each other for several years now. So And like we said before, when you told me that he asked you out, I was like, finally, Jesus, Mary and Joseph. What took you so long? Obviously, I know it took long because he didn't know. But for the other relationships, it really just took me time to get to know the person,
yeah,
and to see our common interests. And then in me getting to know them, I realized what you saw in them,
mm-hmm,
and what created that connection. And that for me is how I get to compersion, is when I can see the parallels of our when our relationship was blossoming, mm-hmm, when it, in the onset of our relationship, when I can see that with people that come into our lives, it makes me happy because I know that there's still some good people in the world. There's still some goodness out there. But no, it's really just getting to know the person and getting, mm-hmm, to know, getting to know their ins and outs, as a friend, and then giving them pieces of me too. It's just creating that connection and creating an open dialogue, that's always open and that's always, yeah, available, so that they know that they can feel comfortable around me too. Because I think some people would be intimidated by me in some ways, intimidated by our relationship.
Yeah. I mean, you said as much when we first started dating.
Definitely. No, I mean, and there's a local perception of y'all as a unit.
Right.
Yeah. That is, again, was awesome for me to see from the outside, because I love the both of you, and I love the both of you as a unit, as well as individually, and want to see that prosper.
For sure. So what moves you?
I will say, I mean, I'm going to reiterate that this is such a different relationship from any relationship that I've ever been a part of.
Yeah.
And that, I have a deep love for you and for Candy both, and did before we started dating.
Yeah.
And so this is really just an extension of that. I'm just getting to share that love in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's incredibly wonderful and gratifying. But all of those things happen because we practice a really, really intense communication.
Yeah. It's not for everybody.
About a lot of things. Yeah. In a way, I think that's maybe a better communicator in other aspects of my life. I'm a better communicator at work. And I'm a better communicator with my friends and certainly with my children. Because of the work that we do together. Compersion here around this table is super easy for me.
Yeah.
Because I love to see you happy. And I love to see Candy happy. And, you know, occasionally I love it when you guys can go be happy together. And it's pretty darn awesome because y'all deserve that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously Candy has met, like, some of my other partners. You had the opportunity to meet one of my comet partners. Mm-hmm. And so, like, did you have any moments of moving from jealousy to neutrality to maybe compersion there, or?
Well, my biggest, I didn't get to know them very well.
Right, it was just a once-off.
But I know you.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't be associating with this other person were there not something special about that other person.
Yes. Yeah.
You have really high standards, and
I do now. I have not always.
You saw something special in them, and I trusted you to be able to handle that.
Yeah.
Do they have, you know, aspects and characteristics that I don't? I should hope so.
Right.
I'm awesome, but I'm not that awesome.
You're pretty awesome.
Pretty awesome.
This person is also pretty awesome too. Yeah. And Kendi's also pretty awesome. So
you're pretty awesome.
And I loved the time that we got to spend together. I totally can see what you see in them and see how happy you are when y'all are together.
Yeah.
Like, why should I be jealous of that? Again, your feelings for Kendi or for any other person don't take away from the feelings that you have for me.
Right.
It is not pie.
No.
Right? Taking a piece and giving it to somebody else doesn't mean I have less pie.
Right. Right. I mean, that's kind of how I move from jealousy to neutrality to compersion is, I mean, Kendi, I think it's so indicative of like who you are as a person and also your profession that you're like, I get to know the person and blah, blah, blah. And then I'm over here with my introvert self going, oh no. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I mean, we do practice very much kitchen table polyamory. So in kitchen table polyamory, everybody kind of knows everybody. I mean, the whole idea is that you can do like we're doing right now and sit around a kitchen table and have a conversation and everybody's cool.
Only with more charcuterie.
Yeah, only with more charcuterie and wine for those of us who are not currently with child. Not everybody wants to practice kitchen table polyamory, and that's fine. There are people who like to practice something called parallel polyamory where you don't really know your metas and things like that. And for some people, that is the way that they cope with jealousy. For me, that would probably make my jealousy go into overdrive. I am not the kind of person that wants to sort of kind of close myself off like that. But, I mean, when I'm thinking about moving from jealousy to neutrality to compersion, I'm going to be looking at my partner. I'm going to be looking at the person that I know already really intimately, and I know what they want. I know that I know what they look for in a partner. And if they're happy and fulfilled, then I'm going to be happy and fulfilled. So
that sounds like a lot of work for the hinge partner. The, you know, the person in the center of the parallel tracks, navigating not only the new relationship, but the communication of all of the aspects of that new relationship to my existing relationship. That sounds exhausting to me.
It can be. So when Carl and I started dating, so obviously Kendi and I were together, and then I also was dating someone else. And, you know, when I was
dating someone else too, wasn't I?
You were, yes.
I was dating someone else. Yeah. How did we have the time on the day for all of those relationships?
Well, we didn't.
Obviously. As you can see, Exhibit A.
We didn't.
Did not.
But, I mean, when I typically get into a relationship with somebody new, one of the ways that I try to combat jealousy is, you know, by kind of sitting down with my current partner or partners and being like, you know, what are you on a need to know basis about? And how would you like to receive this information? You know, would you like to have a conversation right now about this person and kind of what I am hoping to see out of this relationship? Or, you know, are you just kind of wanting to let things unfold? And, you know, those questions about what do you need to know are sometimes very practical. So, like, testing is obviously a really important thing. And so, you know, I let them know what my standards are around testing. And I'm like, I am asking this new person to get tested. And, you know, I often ask my partners, you know, do you want to know, like, if there has been a physical relationship that started? Because obviously that affects you too, or can. Hopefully it doesn't, but it can. And so, like, those are very frank and open and honest conversations that I have to try and mitigate some of that. Having to have two separate conversations whenever we started dating was new for me. I've never had to juggle that much, quite that much before. I still am kind of marveling that I was able to handle that for as long as I did. Obviously not successfully for the long term, but that's
kind of different, you know, different perception of success.
There you go. But that's kind of one way that I sort of handle that as a hinge.
PowerPoints.
PowerPoints, yeah. Pamphlets.
I like note cards in my presentations.
Look, I keep joking that I'm going to make a pamphlet that's just entitled My Trauma that I can hand out to a new therapist, to a new partner, and just like really just make a big shortcut of a lot of different things.
Well, I'm looking over your file. I'm just going to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. That's a good way to make sure I never date again.
This has been great.
Yeah.
I won't call you.
Yeah. Any final thoughts on jealousy after this very candid conversation? Thank you both for your honesty and vulnerability.
Yeah. Jealousy is a feeling. Those feelings are valid and okay because they're feelings.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's what you do about those feelings, how you act on those feelings, right? That's what you can be responsible for. Right?
Yes.
And that's definitely something I have learned over the course of my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't feel guilty about being jealous. Work through it and make sure your actions have a positive outcome with it.
Yeah. And also, don't feel like you have to put up with bad behavior as a result of jealousy.
Mm-hmm.
We can all expect better of one another, and we can all hold each other to a higher standard of being, as Carl sometimes puts it, a grown-ass adult. So.
See.
Well, thank you all for joining us on this episode of the Modern Loving Family Podcast. As always, please check out our link tree for all the different streaming platforms that you can listen to our podcast on. You can also check out our Instagram, which is admittedly not super active right now. I am working on changing it. Our Facebook, and you can also drop us a little tip in our Cash App. So that's $ the Modern Loving Fam. Until next time, everyone, peace and love.
We'll catch you behind the paywall.